Royal Queen Seeds Interviews.
Welcome to another episode of the Royal Queen Seeds Interviews. Today's guest is Eric Vlosky, the Director of Marketing at Pure Pressure. Pure Pressure is the number one manufacturer and provider of solventless processing equipment. Eric has a great knowledge about solventless extracts in general, and this is proven by the many conferences and interviews he had during his career. It's an incredible pleasure to interview him today for this podcast. Welcome, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm all good. Thank you so much. How are things there in Denver?
Yeah, it's really nice. You know, the weather's lovely and we're heading into spring, so things are great.
Yeah, same here. It's a little bit colder, but we can definitely feel the days getting longer. So I think that's positive.
Yeah, agreed.
Perfect. So let's jump right in. This is a question we get all the time. And can you tell us the difference between a concentrate and an extract?
Yeah, great question. That's one we get a lot too. And the short answer is there's no hard definition of what a concentrate is or what an extract is. Typically, an extract is a refined cannabis product that is where you've taken the trichomes and you've taken the resin out of them and refined them in some way. So you're extracting the resin, the cannabinoids, the terpenes from cannabis.
Yeah.
But a concentrate is essentially the same thing. So here in the States, you know, there's no federal governing body that dictates what things are supposed to be called.
Yeah.
So in many ways, a concentrate and an extract are the exact same thing, depending on who you ask.
So we can often see them used interchangeably, like one for the other?
Yes, definitely. That's what we see. You know, whether something is a concentrate or an extract, they are interchangeable terms at this time. I think in the future, you know, there might be legal definitions of what those things are that don't exist right now. But concentrates or extracts can be used to make edibles, for example, or a concentrate can be vaporized. But in the same way, you can vaporize an extract. It's definitely two very related terms, and I'll be interested to see if that gets firmed up in the future. But, you know, for right now, they seem to be the same thing from what I'm seeing in our industry. Yeah.
That's kind of our opinion too. Like, you can't really tell the difference straight away. You can just use them, you know, at the same time. So this one is a little bit more detailed. So can you tell us exactly what solventless or solvent-free extracts are? Because we get both terms usually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, these are two terms that are very different. So, you know, compared to the first question, there's a lot more to talk about here. A solventless extract or concentrate is something that has been made without the use of any solvents whatsoever. So ice water hash or bubble hash is a great example because you're just using ice and water to agitate and break off the trichomes from the cannabis plant. You know, they're filtered and then they're ultimately dried and used.
Yeah.
Solvent-free is where you've got a product that is being made with solvents, but that all of those residual solvents have been purged or removed from the final product. But typically something that's solvent-free means that it was made with solvents in the first place, but then all of those residual solvents were able to be removed.
Yeah.
Now, a question that we get a lot, and that is the subject of quite a bit of debate, is whether or not water is a solvent when you're making bubble hash.
Yeah.
And water is a solvent in nature. You know, it cuts canyons, erosion, things dissolve in water. It can be a solvent. But in the process of making ice water hash, it's not a solvent because it's a carrier. You're using water to carry the trichomes through your process. And then you're ultimately trying to preserve and isolate them, not dissolve them. So if you're doing butane or CO2, you're actually using a chemical solvent. It's dissolving the trichomes and the resins. So that's actually a process of dissolution.
Yeah.
Whereas with ice water hash or rosin, you know, there's never any solvents in the first place. And then we defer to the term solventless.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. That was very interesting. And from your opinion, why do you think so many people now are turning to extracts and buying them?
Yeah. You know, people are always looking for different experiences. And I think the best analogy I've come up with is that, you know, let's say you really like blueberries. You know, it's a fruit that you like.
Yeah.
The cannabis equivalent when you're smoking buds or flower is you're eating the whole bush. You know, you're getting the blueberries, but you're also getting the leaves and the sticks and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's not a judgmental thing. It's just you're getting other organic plant material with your experience, for better or worse, depending on your opinion. People really like extracts because when they're done well, it's, you know, the pure expression of the plant without that other plant
green
material
plant
in the product.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, they're much more potent, kind of the difference between drinking a beer and having spirits or liquor. So there's a potency aspect that a lot of people enjoy. You know, extracts are really popular too because they can be made into a lot of other products like tinctures and edibles and topicals, so that extracted or concentrated products can be used for so many different things. Whereas you have to, you know, take buds or flower and then refine them, extract them, concentrate them to make those other things. So you just have a lot more room to play with when you have concentrates.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'll say is that here in the States, and I bet the same thing will happen in Europe when the laws are there, is that when a new market comes online, you know, a market goes legal or medical or whatever it is, people are really excited to smoke flower because they can go out and they can buy it legally in some way. And they're very excited. But then as time goes on, they say, you know, I want to have a new experience. Like I want to try a vaporizer cartridge, or I want to try a dab, or, you know, edibles and things like that. So it really comes down to the experiences people want to have with cannabis products, and extracts, you know, create a lot of experiences for people beyond what just a joint or a bowl or a blunt can do.
Yeah. Well, of course, the addition of all these products just widens the market as well. So I think it's kind of normal for people to always looking for the next thing, you know, like that's kind of the process behind most things, and you kind of go and create more. And I think that's why the market kind of opens up for other things as well. Obviously, there are loads of pros about like extracts, but can you tell us the disadvantages as well?
Yeah, you know, from a consumer's perspective, if you're used to only smoking flower, you can get caught by surprise with how potent extracts can be. And sometimes for people, you know, their first time, if they have a friend showing them and they're not being very nice about it, they can get you a little too high. So I think potency is something that you have to be aware of. A lot of extracts can't be made safely at home. You need, you know, if you're trying to use solvents, that really needs to be done in a professional lab environment with professional equipment for safety purposes. And that's actually one of the reasons that solventless is so popular with home growers, is that it doesn't have that danger factor.
Yeah.
Another point here is that you need a lot of material. You need a lot of flower, a lot of buds to create any kind of concentrate or extract. You know, you're taking a lot of material and then bringing it down into what people would consider a small amount of extract or concentrate, no matter what method you do. So we get YouTube comments constantly about people saying like, why not just smoke the flower? Who cares about the rosin?
Yeah.
But again, it comes down to your preference and your experience. But I guess the last thing I would say here is that they can be a little bit pricey too, especially the really high-end concentrates like solventless bubble hash or hash rosin, especially the kinds of things that our business produces. Cost can be a little bit of a barrier for some consumers. So, you know, there are some cons. Most people tend to enjoy concentrates when done right, but just if you're new to concentrates, don't let your friend give you too big of a dab, because it probably won't be a good time.
I can imagine. Now you're talking about your rosin and bubble ash and ice ash and all of that. Can you tell us what makes a good quality extract? Because I think out there are just so much information that sometimes we just need to, you know, summarize it basically.
Mm-hmm. I think to summarize it, it comes down to what kind of material are you starting with? Yeah. And I think in Europe, there seems to be a lot bigger emphasis on the quality of the food that's being produced and eaten, for example, whereas in the United States, we don't have that food culture in a lot of ways. So that's like the perfect example for me is that you really need high quality cannabis to make a high quality concentrate. It sounds very simple, but often a lot of like lower or middle grade material, they can't really sell it on the shelf. So they just blast it with butane or CO2, and then they turn it into a concentrate. So if you're trying to make the best quality extract, or at least a good quality one, you really need to start with great quality material going in, because that plant is going to have more cannabinoids. It's going to taste better. It's going to have more terpenes and flavonoids. There's a much longer explanation to this, but for the most part, it's quality in, quality out with extracts. And many of the very best cannabis buds and flowers in the States and in, you know, Canada, they're not being grown to be sold on the shelf. They're being grown to be processed and typically into solventless concentrates. They never make it to the shelf in flower form.
Okay, that's interesting, because as you know, here in Europe have, to begin with, very different legislation based on where you are. So it's kind of hard for us to navigate it, because we don't have dispensaries or bud tenders or any of that yet, hopefully. But, you know, it's very hard for us, because we sometimes the material is very hard to come by. And so I think that's kind of what we see by looking at the US. There is so much variety. So I think, you know, it's very hard sometimes to tell what's good and what's not. So thank you for that. And looking at the extract itself, what can you tell about the color? So what affects the color of an extract?
Yeah. So the color of an extract in terms of solventless production is very different than solvent-based. So I'll start with what people can expect with solvents, and then how it changes when you're doing solventless extractions or concentrates. So depending on your mix of propane or butane, or how you're running your system, if you're doing CO2, you can take pretty low-grade material and have it come out to have a really nice color with solvent-based concentrates. So if you're smoking butane hash oil or some of the other solvent-based concentrates or extracts out there, color isn't a good indicator for the quality of the product because of what's known as CRC. It's a type of remediation where you can actually change the color of the product even if it started looking pretty bad in the beginning. And of course, as we all know, color is one of the biggest indicators of quality, especially when you're buying a bud, whether it's in a bag or you're buying concentrate. Color is, you know, one of the most important visual cues for quality. But with solvent-based concentrates, it doesn't really mean anything because they can manipulate it so easily. With solventless concentrates like hash rosin, sift, all these things, the color of the extract is affected heavily by the freshness of the material. So if it has been freshly, you know, cured and dried and then processed, that makes a huge difference. Even a week or two can change the color dramatically when you process it from when it's harvested. The temperature that you press your rosin at makes a massive difference too. If you're pressing at a very hot temperature, you're going to find that it's going to degrade the color fairly quickly. So you have to find a middle ground between color and yield, because if you press at a very low temperature, sometimes it can affect your yield. So the ultimate quality of the cannabis itself and the freshness and how quickly you process it is what affects the color. So if you've had some buds that have been sitting around for 6 months and you press them in your rosin press, it's probably going to come out really dark. Whereas if your friend just harvested some plants and you just dried them, you just cured them to make flower rosin, it's probably going to come out much, much lighter.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. And this question is, obviously, you have recreational cannabis and therapeutic cannabis. So we get asked loads of times, can you do extract with both, or can you just use recreational one?
Yeah, you can definitely do it with both. There's not a lot of peer-reviewed or scientific evidence out there pointing to whether or not certain concentrates are better for medical patients. We've heard quite a bit from our customers that they only consume solventless because they feel it's a better product for them medicinally, but it all comes down to consumer preference. You can definitely use them both ways. Dispensaries in the United States that have the ability to sell recreationally and medicinally sell, you know, products, especially concentrates on both sides of the aisle. And a lot of people who are medical users tend to gravitate towards concentrates because they tend to consume more cannabis than your average consumer. And smoking a lot of flower can hit your lungs a little bit. You know, that's not always the best experience if you're just smoking flower all day, every day. You usually want to have something a little more potent and not have to consume as much of it to get the effect that you're looking for. So, you know, there's no real difference between making a product concentrate for a recreational consumer versus a medical consumer.
Yeah.
But a medical purchaser or someone doing it for therapeutic effects, they will probably consume different concentrate products, like Rick Simpson oil or RSO is highly therapeutic. They might consume a lot more CBD than someone who is a recreational consumer. So there are some different products that are concentrated that a therapeutic user, medical user might tend to consume more of. But, you know, in terms of making them, there's no real differences other than at the legal or the legislation level.
Yeah, yeah, of course. To go back, you were talking about the color and how fresh versus dried can affect it. Can you tell us if it's best to do extract with dried flowers, cured flowers, or fresh ones?
Yeah, great question. It's our opinion that if you want to make the best concentrate you possibly can, you're pretty much always going to want to use fresh frozen material. And it takes more work if you're someone who's at home. But for businesses, it's often less work because they don't have to trim and dry and cure the material, which can take weeks at times. But what you're really doing when you're using fresh frozen cannabis, where they literally, the plant is in the pot, it's growing, you cut it down, you take the fan leaves off of it, and then you freeze it. And what that does is it preserves a lot of the volatile terpenes that are otherwise lost during the drying process. So people really gravitate towards what are called live concentrates. So people might be familiar with the term live resin or live rosin.
Yeah.
And those are made with a live plant that's been fresh frozen. Now, there is some debate. There are definitely hash makers out there who feel strongly that they can make a better product or a different product by using dried cured flowers. You have to use a dried cured flower if you want to make flower rosin. If you're just going to press a bud, it has to be dried and cured. If it's fresh frozen, it has too much moisture.
Yeah.
So people will take fresh frozen buds, first make it into bubble hash, which is a better process for that, and then they'll press the bubble hash into rosin. But your material changes, your cannabinoids change when you dry and cure it. So you can have a different tasting, a different smelling product with a dried cured base concentrate. And some concentrate methods like CO2, for example, you have to have a dried decarboxylated starting material to actually process with. Whereas with hydrocarbon or solventless, You don't have to dry and cure that material first. So I'm a big fan of fresh frozen being the starting material, and the best concentrates I've ever had are made with those live plants.
Okay, thank you so much. I mean, you are an expert in this field, so it's very enlightening to actually hear from someone who's in the industry and can tell us a lot more of like what goes behind the scene and what actually goes into the making of the solvent. So thank you so much, Eric.
Of course.
Now, of course, not everyone has an industry or standard, you know, lab to do this. So if I'm at home and I want to create something that is good, you know, which one do you think is the easiest solvent extract to do at home?
Yeah, definitely flower rosin. So if you're going to make a concentrate at home of any variety, flower rosin is going to be your go-to because you can literally make it with a hair straightener.
Yeah.
So you don't need to have specialized equipment like what we sell to make flower rosin at home. All you need is, you know, heat and pressure, essentially. Now, if you're trying to make a lot of it, or you're a connoisseur, or you're trying to make a really, really high quality product at home, then that's when you, you know, need to make an investment in your equipment. But all you have to do is press a dried cannabis flower between parchment, in between, you know, a heated up hair straightener. Now, that doesn't give you a lot of control, you know, in terms of your temperature and being able to really dial in your process. But that's literally how rosin was discovered. A guy who goes by the Instagram handle Soil Grown, also his real name is Phil, someone I know. And he basically stole his partner's hair straightener and pressed a bud between it, and oil came out, and the light bulb went off, and he thought, you know, wow, this could be huge. So you can make flower rosin at home. It's very simple. And I think for a lot of people, it's a good experience. But if your temperature is too hot on your plate, it's going to come out smelling like burnt popcorn.
Yeah.
So you want to do a lower temperature setting to try and get your best results if you're doing something very simple at home.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Eric. You have loads of experience and you worked in this field for a while. Why do you think there's a wide variety of extract today compared to the past?
Yeah, you know, first of all, the industry is growing very quickly. So there's a lot more people who are consumers that want to purchase cannabis products. So there's more demand. And then there's businesses that are getting into the space to offer different kinds of processed products and different kinds of equipment. So at a very high level, it's supply and demand. But I think a better way to explain it is that people have all kinds of different preferences. I mean, some people really like oranges and some people can't stand citrus. So when it comes to cannabis products, people are no different. You know, people have all kinds of different taste preferences. I really like fruity concentrates and strains. Some people really like the gassy, heavier strains. And because there's so much competition in the market, businesses have had to differentiate themselves and create different products to appeal to different consumers. So many older consumers in the States, for example, they don't really want to smoke or take dabs. They'd rather just eat edibles or do something more mild. So depending on how old you are, you know, do you have asthma? If you do, you probably don't want to vaporize or dab anything. Or younger consumers tend to want to have that really potent, strong experience with really strong concentrates. I think potency is another great topic that we could talk about if there's time. But, you know, when it comes to why there's so much more variety, it's because there's so much more demand.
Yeah.
And now people have choices when it comes to the products that they buy. So just like at a grocery store, it can be overwhelming how many choices there are. I think a lot of people have the same experience when they walk into a dispensary in the United States.
Yeah, especially if you come from a place where you don't have that variety, I think the choice, you know, can be overwhelming because there's just a lot, you know, to go through, to decide. But it's great that we have, I think, variety and just the people can actually choose what they prefer to consume. So I think that's great. Right. So at this point of the interview, we usually have audience questions. So if you are okay, I will ask you something that they asked us, you know, through Instagram.
Of course.
And the first question is about potency a little bit. And it's, are solventless extract less potent than solvent ones?
Great question. And the short answer is it very much depends, because on average, solvent-based concentrates can be more potent,
yeah,
but they aren't always. You can make a solventless concentrate that's just as potent as a solvent-based one.
Yeah.
But what you find is that a lot of the craft producers that are making the best solventless concentrates and oils are a lot more focused on flavor and aroma and experience than raw potency. So you can isolate THCA in a solventless manner, and that can be 95, 98% THC, you know, really potent stuff. But what you'll find is that on the shelf, your solventless hash rosin is going to often come in at a lower potency than butane hash oil. And yeah, often that's because they're picking strains and they're making it in such a way where there's a lot more emphasis, again, on the flavor and the smell part of the equation, the terpenes and the flavonoids, than just saying, you know, hey, how fast can we go here? How high can we get? It's a little bit of a different mentality.
Yeah.
But potency is a question we get all the time.
Yeah, I bet. The second question is about Micron screen bags. So why are they different, solventless Micron screen bags?
Yeah. So when you're filtering ice water hash or dry sift, Keef, people are familiar with that. Cannabis plants make trichomes, which are the little tiny structures that contain most of the cannabinoids and terpenes and the things that you consume that actually give you effects.
Yeah.
They are grown by plants in many different sizes. So if you go look at macroscopic photography or microscopic photography, you're going to find that certain strains and certain plants grow really large trichomes. So then you need a different sized micron screen to capture those properly. So what you're going to have is, I'm trying to think of a good analogy here, but you know, if you're growing, I don't know, strawberries or something.
Yeah.
Sometimes strawberries come in a lot of different sizes. Sometimes they're really little. Sometimes they're much bigger. It just depends. And if you're trying to capture all of those strawberries in a screen, if you don't have a lot of different screen sizes, some might go straight to the bottom, or maybe they'll all just get stuck at the top because your filter is too small.
Yeah.
So the different microns also make a big difference in terms of quality, because you'll tend to find your very best, most resinous trichomes in the 73 to 120 micron range. That's very common. That's where the best trichomes are typically found. Mm-hmm. But with CBD and hemp strains, their trichomes tend to be very small, like almost too small to capture, which is why there aren't a lot of good CBD strains out there yet that people are processing solventlessly. They're usually using CO2 or ethanol. So the size of the trichome is what, it really dictates which size screens you're going to use to capture them, those micron bags.
Okay, thank you so much. And what can we do with the material that remains, you know, in the bags?
So when you've got, you know, people call them chips or rosin chips, it's that leftover material. There are cannabinoids left in there. And what most of the time people do is, if you've got a really good flower or hash or sift you're pressing, we usually tell people, press it again. Go up in temperature a little bit, press it again. You can get a slightly lower quality product, but you can get more temperature in there and get more out of it. Now, if you've already done that, or you're not interested in doing that, usually going the edible route is the way to go to extract those cannabinoids with a lipid or a fat. Like, people will put their rosin chips in a crock pot or a pot to take it out with butter or coconut oil or something else, because lipids and fats are good carriers and that cannabinoids will dissolve into those fats, you know, just like how people are familiar with making canna butter and cookies and brownies at home by boiling cannabis. So go low temperature. You don't want to cook it too much. And, you know, off the top of my head, you want to be below 200 degrees Fahrenheit. I will admit, I don't know exactly that conversion in Celsius because I'm an American.
I think it's around 100, but I will check.
Yeah. So, you know, lower temperature extraction, but you can definitely, if you save up your rosin chips and get a bunch of them, then you should, you know, bring them all together and then make some canna butter or make some canna oil with those. That's the best thing to do typically.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much, Eric. So this brings us to the end of this interview, and it's been incredibly enlightening. And we want to thank you for your time, your knowledge, and to open us to new way of experiencing this plant. So thank you so much, Eric. I hope you had a nice time on our podcast, and we hope to hear from you soon.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate your time. Always happy to answer questions or, you know, help out wherever I can.
Of course. Thank you so much, Eric. Bye.
Royal Queen Seeds Interviews.